So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Are you happy it's Friday? It is Friday here in the trending world. I hope you are planning a great weekend ahead. Coming up today on the show, we're going to talk everything from Texas abortion law. We need to understand why this is a historic abortion law actually put in place, and it's changing the future of abortion. This is the most pro-life and strongest law we've seen on the books since the Supreme Court decision of Roe v. Wade in 1973, making abortion legal through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy. Why? I'll share with you why. And we'll get into many of the questions that you may have about the law. If you have a question, numbers 1-888-914-9149. We're also going to discuss a handful of myths that pro-abortion arguments bring up, really debunking pro-abortion arguments here on Trending. Everything from the simple, my body, my choice, to the argument that women who have miscarriages will be punished under this law, whether or not this law punishes women and even the man who takes them for abortion. We'll cover all of it. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Okay, I received some information on the down low a couple weeks ago, and I have been dying to share it with you, and I had to wait because lo and behold, it had to do with a very, very famous person who is playing Padre Pio in an upcoming film. Shia LaBeouf. That's right. Okay, I made a hope-filled prediction a few weeks ago. You may recall when news came out that not only was Shia playing the part of the younger Padre Pio in an upcoming film that starts filming this fall, but also that he spent time with some pretty incredible monks. He spent time in prayer with them, and he has been like blown away by his experience. In fact, if you missed that episode, incredible conversation, we share a little bit of what Shia LaBeouf has to say about his experience. And I do think that this man, will at least, very least, convert to Catholicism. But I made a hope-filled fun prediction, and that is, what if he became like a monk in the Catholic Church? This man has been wandering. He struggled with anger. He struggled with getting in trouble with the law. He struggled with abusiveness working with Disney, and here this man is. He's clearly hungry for something more. And he's found it. But does he know it? Okay, so here's the news. Shia LaBeouf went to a Catholic church that practices only the Latin Mass and went in, attended the Latin Mass. Yes, that's right. Shia LaBeouf is attending traditional Latin Mass, and he's been in contact with priests asking questions and being taught how to learn the Latin Mass because he has to, in the upcoming film where he depicts Padre Pio, he has to act out celebrating a traditional form Latin Mass. How cool is that? That is really cool. I'll tell you, the priest that he approached just, I think, about fell over when Shia LaBeouf not only was at his Mass, but then approached him asking him questions. And this is pretty incredible. So, okay, join me. We've got to pray for Shia LaBeouf. Now, when we make a conscious effort of thousands, millions of people praying for Shia LaBeouf, do you know the power of prayer? I think, for example, of one person in particular, Milo Yiannopoulos, who about 3 years ago, who has been a practicing Catholic, even in the face of having experienced sexual abuse at the hands of a priest, he's remained Catholic. He has struggled with same-sex attraction for years. He even had a partner and all of these things. And people in droves have been praying for him for a few years. For him, who, by the way, all along always upheld what the Catholic Church taught. However, even while he upheld what the Catholic Church taught, if you don't know who Milo Yiannopoulos is, he's someone who, like, he's like the first person to really be canceled, like, publicly in the last few years. And he is a political commentator with a lot of sass, a lot of humor, a lot of inappropriate humor. But he's a Catholic, and he's always upheld what the Church taught in terms of teaching it and saying the Church is right, but also saying, I'm not there yet. I'm struggling. This is right what it's teaching, but I'm not there. Well, guess what? Earlier this year, around the feast day of St. Joseph, Milo Yiannopoulos announced that he's no longer gay. He's ex-gay. He is helping people who are struggling with same-sex attraction. He's sharing his story. Incredible conversion. Incredible story. Okay, I share that story because Shia LaBeouf could be that next massive conversion we have if we're willing to pray for him. You know, there are some people who literally have no one praying for them. Will you pray for Shia LaBeouf? I'm asking you to literally add him to your daily prayer intentions. Okay, pretty cool. He attended, again, Inside News, only heard here on Trending. No one else knows this. And in fact, I couldn't disclaim no names, locations. I had to be careful. But here's the reality. Shia LaBeouf is actually attending a traditional Latin mass so that he can learn how to depict it in the upcoming Padre Pio film. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. Tomorrow marks the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Can you believe it's been 20 years? I can't quite like fathom this. So here's reality. I want to hear from you. Where were you when 9/11 happened? How did you find out? Well, fun fact about Tim Ray, I was actually 9 years old when 9/11 happened. That was a long time ago, at least in my world. Maybe 20 years ago was nothing to you, but I was 9 years old when 9/11 occurred. Where were you? How did you hear the news? My producer just found out how old I am. He's like, I'm older than you by a year. I know, we're not supposed to share these things. I really don't care that much. The thing is, I have to remember how old I am. But so 20 years ago, 9/11, I was 9 years old. I'll never forget. My youngest sibling wasn't even born yet. In fact, she's a 9/11 baby, born that next year. So here's the reality. There are three of us siblings. I remember we were sitting in our living room, and we didn't grow up really watching the news. But for some reason, I had turned on the television that morning, and either the channel was on the news or as I was flipping through channels. That was when you actually like flipped through channels to get to the channel you wanted to watch. I was probably aiming for Disney at the time because I wasn't really a Nickelodeon person. But here I was. I turn on the TV, and I see just a horrible scene of smoke and buildings and destruction. I even think that it might have been on mute. I don't think that there was any sound. And I remember just looking in shock at the screen. I was 9 years old and my mom was getting ready in the bathroom. I said, Mom, I think something really terrible is happening in the world right now. Like something really bad has happened. You need to come here. I knew and understood at 9 years old, something terrible has happened and this has struck the whole world. But this is going to impact us. I remember just saying, like, Mom, come here. She was getting ready. And I remember standing there in horror as then within seconds, the second plane hit on live national television, the second of the two Twin Towers. And we just watched in horror. No one knew what to do. We couldn't believe that an airplane, I mean, think about how relatable in a sense that was. All of us have been in a commercial airplane at some point. There are very few people, you know, I know who haven't flown. We've all been there. That could have been us. This is on American soil. What is happening? We didn't know at first, you know, who was this? How did it happen? We end up, you know, the story unfolds throughout the day about the Pentagon, the other plane that crashed and missed. I remember, you know, people even then were speculating that plane was aimed for somewhere else. That plane was aimed for the White House, wasn't it? I mean, I remember us speculating and guessing that's where the other plane was headed for. We didn't know at this point. It was all news. And I remember even as a little kid participating in the conversations, I was homeschooled. School was canceled for the day. We spent the whole day in front of the television. I remember my mom being on the phone, talking to friends, family members. What is happening to our nation? Is this the beginning of a war? Will this lead to war on American soils? Actually, another thing I remember about this, actually. So at the time, I grew up in the pro-life movement, if you didn't know this. And my family is very close to Father Frank Pavone and Priests for Life and the great work that they do. And I remember one of the first things my mom did was, how are our friends at Priests for Life? Is Father Pavone okay? You know, calling over to New York to see how everyone was over there. And then I remember as the day continued to unfold, and maybe you remember. I'd like to hear your story. Where were you when 9/11 happened? How did it change your life? How did you find out? The number's 1-888-914-9149. As the day went on, I remember, again, I was 9 years old when 9/11 happened, watching people jump out of the Twin Towers. I mean, you don't forget something like this. And some people might say, you should have turned the TV off. And that's a whole other conversation in of itself. But I remember seeing one person after another. And this wasn't a movie. I knew it wasn't a movie. But I just kept thinking the whole time, like, why couldn't they save them? And you see in the movies where there's someone who has to jump out of a building. You see where they have one of those giant trampolines. And again, this is kid brain reacting to what's happening. 9/11, can't they just put a giant trampoline there and save this person who's jumping out of the building? And then, you know, thinking about it now as an adult, well, you didn't realize, I think I even had to have this explained to me, how tall these buildings are, the Twin Towers. And how even if you put something, for a cushion for a person to land on, that wasn't a survivable jump. And just imagine being at the point, those people where they're literally jumping out of the building, the state of mind they had to have been in. Now, this is a day to pray in thanksgiving for the fact that our nation remained safe, that we did not see war break out on American soil. A day of thanksgiving for all those soldiers who then went and fought defending our country. For all of the police officers, first responders, firefighters, and volunteers who were digging for weeks on end in the rubble, helping to save people. You know, I keep coming back to watching as a little girl. I was 9 years old. These people jumping out of the buildings, out of the Twin Towers. And it made me think about, you know, why couldn't they be saved? I kept thinking that over and over again. And how do we think about our own loved ones who are suffering in their own sin outside of the church? And we think, like, why can't they be saved? Why couldn't they know Christ? Just like me as a little kid kept thinking, why can't they just put a trampoline out there so that that person jumping out of the building could be saved? And little did I know how far that jump was and that no trampoline could save them in this case. But do we ever think about that in terms of our loved ones? You know, why can't they know Christ? I hope that we have the same desire for the salvation of souls as we did that day on 9/11 20 years ago for all the people we wish were saved. Last year, I actually met for the first time a 9/11 survivor who was in one of the Twin Towers. And I remember just being shocked. She said, yeah, I don't know why I shared this with you. I don't normally tell people. You know, it's not something I talk a lot about. She had moved to California after growing up in New York, a native New Yorker. All her family was still out there. And she moved to California because after having experienced that, she thought, why not? Why not? I can do anything. You know, in part, her life at that point was, you know, it's all about having fun. And even now, you know, 20 years later, I met her last year, you know, it's about having fun. Why not just do things? And she did have faith. And she definitely had a level of faith that, you know, Jesus is my Lord and Savior. She wasn't Catholic, was Protestant. And I want to do good. But, you know, it doesn't make me wonder if we survived 9/11, if we had a life-changing and almost death-like experience such as that, would it change us? Would we take our faith more seriously? What would it have done to us? I'd like to hear from you today. You're listening to Trending with Tim right here on Relevant Radio. It's the 20th anniversary tomorrow of 9/11. Where were you when 9/11 occurred? How did it change your life? Calling now from Brooklyn is Robert, who had a relative in the tower. Robert, welcome to Trending. What's your story?
Hi, how you doing, Timmy? Can you hear me clearly?
We can hear you great. Thanks for calling. What's your story?
Okay. Well, basically, I was in California at that moment, but I was woken up by the phone call and at 6 o'clock in the morning saying that, you know, the tower was hit. Of course, we all go through watching that. However, there was a individual inside the tower, which his name is Archangel Vasquez, and many of the floors have what they call fire marshals or watchers, and they're assigned to evacuate people. Now, he was in the South Tower on the 41st floor, and of course, the North Tower was the first one to get hit, so they started evacuating. And then all of a sudden, they told everyone to go back up. So he decided to tell everyone on his floor, no, exit. Please exit. So he forced everybody out. At that moment, while they were coming down, the second tower got hit. Because remember, they're going down the stairs instead of the elevator, so they're going down 41 flights. And when they got hit, he rushes back into the building after this last lady saw him. That's how we knew he was still in there, because she reported saying that he made sure she got out. And he rushes back into the building, and then the building shortly after collapses because he went to help. But he safely was able to evacuate everyone in his floor.
Wow, Robert, that's incredible. You now live in Brooklyn. If you're just joining us, his relative was on the 41st floor in the second tower, in the South Tower. And when they're being told to go back up inside, he said, no, let's go and get out of here. That is so incredible. And I think that it has to be a consolation for you, knowing, you know, your family member didn't die in vain, that he actually helped to save a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have evacuated. And who then he went in, and I imagine other people made it out of the building as well because of him. Robert, thanks for sharing your story. Where were you when 9/11 occurred? Well, pray for Robert's relative who died in the Twin Towers at 9/11, and for any of those who died as a first responder in one of the buildings impacted by 9/11. Sandra in Houston was in Paris when 9/11 occurred. Sandra, welcome to Trending. Where were you when 9/11 happened, and how did it change your life?
Actually, I was on a 4-day trip by myself, and my last day was 9/11. And I was all the way up to the top of the Eiffel Tower at 12 noon, approximately. It was 6 p.m. Paris time, so it was 12 noon, New York. So everything had fallen down, and I didn't find out what happened until I got back to my hotel room. So I was scared. I was so scared. I told the concierge, you're kidding me, because they told me that this happened. And I didn't hear any of it. I was, like, having the time of my life up the top of the Eiffel Tower, saying to myself I didn't want to leave. And I got stuck there 8 extra days.
Wow, yeah, you don't think about how 9/11 would have impacted people who traveled abroad, because, I mean, this is another part of 9/11. The world of flying completely changed. I don't know a world of flying prior to 9/11 and the level of restrictions and security that has been implemented. I mean, that all that security isn't there. You could go right up to the gate. You didn't have to get to the airport as early as you do now. And everything has changed since 9/11 in that respect at airports. Thanks for sharing your story, Sandra. Margaret, who lives in Long Island, tell us what happened for you on 9/11. Oh, we're going to have to reconnect with you. We can't quite hear you via your audio. Where were you when 9/11 happened? It's been 20 years. We'd love to hear from you, how it changed your life. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Continue to tell the stories of 9/11. I'll be right back here on Trending as we dive into our series on the virtue of justice, what it has to do with Sunday Mass, prayer, going to confession. And we'll also discuss the Texas abortion law and debunk pro-abortion arguments. I'll be right back here on Trending. Subscribe now. Head over to relevantradio.com/trending to subscribe to the podcast. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Have a question during the show? The number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can comment on my Instagram story. I put a question box up there. So here's the deal. Texas abortion law, what the heck is happening? The world is losing its crap over this. I mean, people are going insane. People are literally passing out. Free contraception, free Plan B, which is an abortion, in the state of Texas. The drive share program Lyft has announced that they'll pay the fees for anyone who gives someone a ride to get an abortion if they're sued. Uber has commented saying the same thing. Planned Parenthood is beside themselves. You should see. I'm on the Planned Parenthood, NARAL now, all the pro-abortion groups. I'm on all of their email lists. And you should see, they are shocked. They're absolutely shocked. They actually thought that when they sued, it would do something. But there's something really different about this Texas abortion law. And you need to understand this, because this is ingenious. I would like to shake the man or woman's hand who wrote this law, who had this idea. Because this is huge. We've shared over and over again about various states who have passed and laws that have banned abortion after a baby's heartbeat is detected. So ideally, we know that a baby's heartbeat starts beating, according to the latest Oxford study, the most recent research, by 16 days. However, when is the baby's heartbeat detectable? It's really about 6 weeks that the heartbeat is detectable in a common ultrasound, common technologies where a woman goes in for an appointment. So what happens is when these various states, such as Ohio, Iowa, Mississippi, a bunch of other ones that I could list, end up implementing a heartbeat law, what happens is when they implement that heartbeat law, it is the government that upholds the law. So in other words, if someone were then to go and obtain an abortion after a heartbeat is detected, it would be the government who is suing that abortion clinic and that abortionist who performed the abortion. But what's different about the Texas law is that this is enjoined from being enforced in a different way. So let's talk about this. So what happens is when the heartbeat laws in Ohio, Iowa, and some of the other states pass, they go to the governor's desk, they go through the legislator, everything's good to go. They're actually law, but what happens is they're enjoined from being enforced. So what that means is that the court... So Planned Parenthood files a lawsuit, and the lawsuit goes through and everything. The reality is what happens is the court upholds maybe the law, but the problem is that the state, the government in Iowa, Mississippi, or Ohio, wherever it is enjoined from enforcing the law. So basically, the government doesn't have to prosecute on this. Police officers don't have to enforce it. The court, the legal system don't have to enforce it. Why? Because when Planned Parenthood sues the state of Mississippi, for example, we have the lawsuit coming up of Jackson versus, I'm forgetting the name. I want to say it's Whole Woman's Health, but I think I'm totally wrong on that. I'm confusing my Supreme Court cases right now. But in the case where right now, Mississippi, the state of Mississippi, would be sued in the lawsuit having to do with the Mississippi case that we're seeing. Well, here, you can't sue the state because in the current Texas law, it's not the state that upholds it, but it's the opportunity for individuals like you and I to file a lawsuit against an abortionist or anyone who aids and abets the performance of an abortion. So we're going to explain, because we got to get into some of the nitty-gritty on this law, because a lot of people have been trying to figure out, wait, I thought this was just a heartbeat law. Oh no, it's actually rather different. And people are realizing this is why, as of the beginning of September, this law is actually being enforced. So normally, in Ohio or Iowa, they have the heartbeat law. When a heartbeat's detectable, the state of Ohio, according to the law, is supposed to prosecute against anyone who would perform an abortion or aid and abet an abortion. Okay, well, Planned Parenthood then sues, and then they use a Supreme Court case from 1992 of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, saying things such as there can be no undue burden placed on a woman to access an abortion, or saying things such as there can't be restrictions placed on abortion prior to viability, which currently, statistically, we place that at 22 weeks right now, but there actually have been babies who have survived at 20 weeks. Now, viability is only determined based on how good our medicine is, our life-saving medicine is. So viability at one point could go all the way back to 16 weeks, to 10 weeks potentially, 12 weeks. Viability is something that's movable based on our achievements in medical research and application in medical sciences. So what happens is usually the law, such as in Ohio and Iowa and other states, are enjoined once Planned Parenthood sues from being enforced. So that means that although it's a law in the book in Ohio or wherever it might be, the government doesn't have to enforce it because of Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Do you get that? So even though we pass these laws, they don't end up being enforced. And so although it's great news that this could actually pass through a legislator and that enough legislators actually voted for a pro-life law and that then the governor signed this into law. But unfortunately, a lot of the time we don't really see it do enough. And that's why a lot of people have said, well, I don't know what case will make it to the Supreme Court. I don't know what case will be overturned by Roe versus Wade. We need the right case. And so some people have said, well, is this Mississippi? Well, I think Mississippi will, hopefully, God willing, we've got to pray for our Supreme Court justices, do something good when it comes to putting additional restrictions on abortion. I don't know that it'll overturn Roe versus Wade. I'm not that hopeful. I mean, I am hopeful and I am prayerful and God works miracles, but that's not my expectation. I think this is going to allow for further restrictions to be placed on abortion. What's going to happen, and I've discussed this on the show. In fact, we'll post a link to it in the show notes. What we're going to see is actually the outcome of this case, which will probably be delivered. The Supreme Court will deliver that in June-ish of next year. I think that the Supreme Court will end up determining what an undue burden is, which is what Planned Parenthood versus Casey puts in stone there in that 1992 Supreme Court case. So they're going to have to actually define, for example, what an undue burden is. There are a few other things that will occur, but I want to focus on Texas. So why is Texas different? If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timura here on Relevant Radio. Well, I mentioned just a second ago, this is different from a criminal law where Planned Parenthood sued the state because the state would be enforcing the law. This law is actually a civil cause of action. So what that means is you or I or any man who works at the grocery store or works anywhere could file a lawsuit against the abortionist or anyone who's aided and abetted an abortion. Okay, so then let's bring us to the whole Lyft scenario. Lyft, along with Uber, have announced that if one of their drivers is sued for helping drive a woman to obtain an abortion, that they will fight that and help with the legal fees. So drivers, don't worry, do what you have to do. And Lyft, of course, has also donated $1 million or more dollars to Planned Parenthood since then. I don't know about you, but that's a delete of the Lyft app from my phone. I don't know that Uber's made the donation, but they have said they'll pay the legal fees. Okay, we could get into the like hairs in a lot of these dimensions, but here's the reality. What happens? Who's punished under this? I literally just deleted my Lyft app. Excellent, Lucas. Good job. Delete the Lyft app. Please go do it. You know, if you have to take a taxi cab, that's fine. And we could, again, get into all of that. But here's what happens. Someone asked a great question on Instagram. And if you have a question, number's 1-888-914-9149. Or you can ask on my Instagram story. Follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I love Instagram. I share with you what's happening on the show. You get to share your thoughts about what you hear on the show and ask your questions. So be sure to connect there. So Alola ended up asking, okay, my question is, a lot of people are claiming that this law doesn't punish the man involved in the abortion. Is this true? People are also asking, does this punish the woman who goes for the abortion? All great questions. The law is actually quite clear. It's quite clear that the people who are punished are those who actually kill the baby or aid and abet the killing of the child. So that's up to lawyers and judges to work out. But I think it's highly unlikely that a cab driver or a Lyft driver or an Uber driver driving a woman to an abortion clinic, even if they are sued, would actually be prosecuted for this. Now, you have to also understand that the creation of this law is also ingenious, because why? The punishment isn't jail. The punishment is just a fine, a severe fine. The pro-life movement is trying to put in check that you perform an abortion, that's wrong. There's a punishment. Now, the law is very clear. It does not, this was intentional, it does not penalize a woman in any way. Why? Because in fact, most pro-life people actually believe that a woman is a victim of abortion as well, even if she chose it. Because of the cultural attitudes that have lied to women to make them believe that abortion is their only option, that abortion is an option, that abortion is necessary. This is very important. Now, could also get into, well, would the man be responsible? Let's say the guy who took her to the abortion clinic to have the abortion, who's the father of the child, would he be sued? Well, I think that that's also a very interesting question, and I have not seen enough information on this. He could be, for aiding and abetting the killing of a child. And I think more so where we would see that he could be, and again, he could be sued, but it's a matter of, we're going to have to see how this works out. But I think what will be interesting to see is if he's forcing her into the abortion, all the more so. I think I could see that more so in the direction of him being prosecuted for violating the Texas abortion law, the heartbeat law. However, there could also be a case made for the man cooperating in the abortion with the woman who he's gotten pregnant, potentially also being a victim of the culture. Or not wanting the abortion. Often many men I've been in front of the abortion clinics and have talked to countless men who don't want their girlfriend or spouse to have an abortion, but they go with them because that's their child. So even though they're saying no, they go with them. Not saying that's right, but also it's a reminder why we need male sidewalk counselors outside in front of the abortion clinic as well to encourage and build up men who are waiting out there as their spouses or girlfriends are about to have an abortion. So here's the reality. Here's what's happening. Planned Parenthood doesn't know who to sue right now to try and prevent this law from going into place. They tried suing the state of Texas, but the Supreme Court's like, well, the state of Texas isn't the one who implements this law, so sorry. Right now, normally, in the case of Ohio or Iowa, Planned Parenthood and all the abortion movement would sue the state because the state's responsible for implementing the law. Well, in this case, it's you and I who would be the ones who would sue and keep in check and accountable those people who are giving access to abortion. But no one has enforced the law yet. Unless something has happened today where someone has filed a lawsuit, Planned Parenthood doesn't know who to sue because we, you and I, are responsible, if in the state of Texas, for upholding the law. So I hope that makes a little bit more sense, because this is why the pro-abortion movement is panicking, and this is why we should be celebrating the fact that this law is so brilliantly done. And we need to pray for those people who implemented it. We need to pray for, here's the fantastic news. In fact, thank you, NARAL. NARAL is Pro-Choice America. It's a pro-abortion group, because they just gave me an updated list. I knew some of these, but I didn't know all of them. They are panicking. Why? Because their news release that came out just over the last 2 hours said, oh no, lawmakers across the country have a blueprint to enact copycat bills to the Texas law. And guess what? Guess who's on the list? Florida, Arkansas, Indiana, Mississippi, North Dakota, Missouri, South Carolina. I also heard about Ohio and Iowa. Praise the Lord, because this is something that's changing and saving lives. This is huge news. Life-changing. Life-altering. And I think that we need to pray for our Supreme Court justices as the Mississippi law goes before them. The Mississippi law having also to do with putting restrictions on abortion. So what's currently happening in the state of Texas? Because this was a very, very important question. Under the current Texas law, this leads to a minimum of 150 babies being saved per day in Texas. How many days are we into the month? 10 days? So we're looking at, what would that be? 1,000, 1,500 babies saved from abortion, if my math serves me correctly. 1,500 babies saved from abortion, just in the state of Texas, at least, in the last week and a half. Every life is worth it, even if this ends up being challenged in court, even if this ends up being denied. Every single life that is currently living because of this law is a life worth saving. Praise the Lord. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. I want to quickly debunk some of these pro-abortion arguments that people have. Number one, and many of you have sent some of these questions in via Instagram. My body, my choice. Okay, number one, if it was your body or your choice, the baby would have some blood type as you. If it were your body or your choice, the baby would always be the same sex as you. If it were your body or your choice, the baby would have the same DNA, all of which does not occur. Could be the same sex, but that's a 50-50 shot-ish, right? Okay. Abortion is healthcare. False. Abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease, and a baby can't be equated to a cancer or any form of illness. You see, abortion isn't healthcare because it negatively impacts the health of the mother as well as the health of the baby. Ding, ding, ding. There's a baby there too. How does it impact the health of the mother? Psychologically. To name one example, substance abuse. Very, very high likelihood towards substance abuse, depression, anxiety. I could go on. Number two, more serious than people often discuss, physically, very common for a woman to have an infection after abortion, to experience infertility, to have frequent miscarriages after, to go into preterm labor, to end up developing breast cancer because the breast tissue that develops and changes during pregnancy is interrupted and damaged by not going through all the levels of development in the lobules of the tissue of the breast, because normally you have a lot more breast tissue that develops in pregnancy, and then those cells turn into cancer-resistant cells at the very end of pregnancy throughout the course. Well, when you have an increase in volume in breast tissue that is cancer-vulnerable, what happens is the development of the baby stops, and so the development of the breast tissue stops as well. And so what we've seen is there's a direct correlation between abortion and breast cancer and actually causing breast cancer. There's a lot of clear research on this. It's not even debatable. It's an absolute fact. Another pro-abortion argument that we have to debunk. If abortion is overturned, women will be prosecuted. Never in the case of laws being implemented by pro-lifers is the woman prosecuted. It's always the abortion, as is the case now, and those who aid and abet the abortion. Also, people are saying, well, we need greater access to contraception because contraception decreases abortion. False. You can keep passing out all the contraception you want in the state of Texas, as many people are doing on the streets right now. But here's the reality. I worked firsthand for over 5 years in a crisis pregnancy center. I've been sidewalk counseling I've not sidewalk counseled much lately, but since I was 13 years old. Nearly every single woman I have ever spoken to who has had an abortion or who has found herself in a crisis pregnancy has been on some form of birth control, at least one. Birth control isn't always effective. In fact, many women, especially teenagers, don't know how to effectively use birth control. You tell me they're going to take it at the right time, the right day, every single day. Also, contraception lies. These girls inside the counseling room in front of the abortion clinic have told me, well, I couldn't believe I was pregnant. I thought I engaged in, quote, safe sex or, quote, smart sex. Why? Because they used a barrier, some other form of hormonal contraception. But there is a baby. So what am I saying here? Contraception doesn't decrease abortions, it increases abortions. Because it makes women believe, quote, that they engage in safe sex and so no baby will result. Yet when the baby does result, that baby's not wanted. Unwanted pregnancies occurred once abortion was implemented. I'll repeat that again. Unwanted pregnancies and the justification to end the lives of these babies occurred once abortion became the law of the land. Now, people will say, well, minority and low-income people of people of color will suffer without abortion access. Let me come back to what I told you last Friday on the show when our very own president, Joe Biden, commented on this, saying that he was going to do something about it. Which, by the way, breaking news the last 24 hours, the Department of Justice is suing the state of Texas. Well, that's real dumb because guess what? Texas isn't the one who's implementing the law. It's you and I who have the capacity. But what did Biden say? I told you this last week. Listen, he said that these people needed health care, particularly, I'm quoting him, communities of color and low income. What he's saying is that color people, black people, and poor people should have abortions. And that we should abort poor people and black people. That's exactly what he said. But really quick. How do we respond to the claim that minority and low-income people of color and people of color will suffer without abortion access? Abortion has ravaged minority communities. The black community alone, just in the last year, the latest data from the CDC show that over a third of all abortions are performed on black people when black people only make up 14% of the population. It's a travesty that is genocide. Also, men are suffering because of lost fatherhood within minority communities, and it is significantly impacting the mental health of men and women. We are not doing them a justice by giving them access to abortion. We are threatening their spiritual, emotional, and physical well-being, longevity, capacity to hold a job, capacity to have a family, capacity to experience joy in life. Women, men, our nation deserves better than abortion. I'll be back debunking more myths of abortion. We'll continue our series on the virtue of justice.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, questions have been rolling in to debunk pro-abortion arguments. We're going to have to continue this all week long next week. Not only will we be doing a virtue series, continue the next virtue in the four cardinal virtues is temperance, but we'll also, all week long, I'm going to dedicate to debunking pro-abortion arguments. So if you have a pro-abortion argument having to do with the Texas law or anything else, let me know. If you don't quite understand the Texas law, this is a big deal. This is historic. The most historic law implemented since Roe versus Wade. So if you missed the conversation, head over to relevantradio.com/trending. Subscribe to the podcast, by the way. Give us a 5-star review wherever you listen if you haven't already. We're everywhere where you listen to your podcast, so be sure to support us. But here's the reality. You need to know what's happening. I just told you. I'm going to respond to one more question about pro-abortion argument, and then we'll continue your questions next week. So if your question wasn't answered, I know a lot of you have been asking on Instagram. I will continue to answer them throughout the week. And you can send them to me on Instagram or join me also for my Instagram Live, where I show a little bit with you after the show about what's covered. So here's one more I want to touch on. Abortion promotes a rape culture. When you don't have access to it. That this Texas abortion law promotes a rape culture. I could not believe it. My jaw dropped when I heard this. Do not believe that the Texas abortion law promotes a rape culture. That's a lie. Abortion destroys the evidence of rape. Did you know that there are times where prosecution doesn't occur against a rapist because the evidence has been destroyed? The baby, the DNA. Okay? That's really important for us to understand. And Planned Parenthood and the wider abortion industry has been caught red-handed being involved in aiding and abetting everywhere from rapists, fathers, siblings, coaches who have harmed young women and gotten them pregnant. Planned Parenthood has been caught. I have seen the legal documents. I have seen the cover-up. I have seen the paying off. I've seen these documents across my desk over and over again. I know countless women who have been through abortions, who have been raped. I know countless women who have been through choosing life after having been raped. Abortion doesn't heal a woman who has been raped. Women who have been raped should not be able to abort because they're not better off. A woman who's been raped is a victim, yet she starts to identify as a perpetrator when she has an abortion because the child was an innocent bystander just like she was innocent when that rapist attacked her. And so her ability to heal is stymied, it's thwarted, it's damaged because she's now identifying with a rapist more so than she does with herself as a victim. Even the rapist doesn't receive a death sentence. Why should an innocent bystander, such as the baby? And I could share with you countless stories. We don't have time today. But here are just some of the arguments we need to respond and engage with. Grapple with these arguments. Have them. Be passionate. Be friends. Have calm body language when you talk about it. But we've got to talk about it. This is a big deal. We're going to talk later this week about everything from, does this law punish a woman who miscarries? No, it doesn't. That's a myth. We'll talk about it next week and much more. But here's the deal. We are wrapping up our virtue series this week on the virtue of justice. What's justice? St. Thomas Aquinas defines it: rendering a person his due. In other words, giving to another person what is due to them. Now, let's talk about this in relation to worship. I was talking just a couple weeks ago about how everything we have in life is meant to be given back to God. Our life, our income, everything is meant to be surrendered back to God. Now, I'm not saying you have to donate everything because, in fact, God has given you responsibilities that you need to live out and accomplish and take culpability for in your families. And so it is an act of justice as you're functioning in your income with various things. But our whole life is meant to be given back to God. Our whole life is meant to be an act of worship because everything comes from God and everything is meant to return to God. That's why we should go to Mass on Sundays and actually spend the whole day dedicating it, setting apart for God. Why we should pray. Why we should go to confession, give thanks and praise to God. Did you know that worship, prayer, all of this falls under the virtue of justice? Well, Thomas Aquinas says worship is due to God alone. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 6 says, in all thy ways, think of him. St. Augustine says that we ought to seek God again, whom we had lost by our neglect. Our neglect. Why do we neglect God? Well, when we neglect God, we are turning away from our responsibility to worship him. Everything came from him, and any grateful individual, it's a just act to show an act of gratitude. Did you know that religion is a virtue? It's a part of justice. Thomas Aquinas says a virtue is that which makes its possessor good and his acts good likewise. You see, worship, religion, praise, thanksgiving, all of this is what properly orders our life. You see, acts of justice order our life in relation to one another, in relation to God. Yet there's a trend in our world today of extreme chaos. We don't know if we're male or female. We don't know what's up or down. You can't even say the earth is round anymore. You can't even say 2 + 5 = 7. We experience extreme stress, anxiety. You can't tell me how to raise my family. You can't tell me what a family should look like. Anything works. I talked about this actually Wednesday on the show. Our responsibility to protect in society. I read to you a little bit of a child's book that I read that basically promoted any type of family. There's a lot of confusion today. Well, what helps us overcome the chaos in life? Properly ordered worship, prayer. We need to pay God the due honor we owe to him. St. Augustine, you've heard the line many times before, our souls are restless until they rest in you. Why are our souls, why are our bodies restless until they rest in God? Because our proper being is to worship and return to God. Let's talk about this for a second. Did you know that even verbal prayer out loud and singing praise are a part of an act of justice? Because they're used to bring ourselves and others to honor and worship God. That's why saying things such as, "Oh my God," in a derogatory way is an act of injustice. That's why praising the Lord, let's say someone gives you a compliment, say thank you, but say praise the Lord. Why? Because all good gifts, all talent come from God. You see, prayer, speaking of God out loud, thanking Him, praising Him in front of others, singing His praises benefit us, even though they're an act of justice toward God. Thomas Aquinas says, "For as much as a man by praising God ascends in his affections to God, by so much is he withdrawn from things opposed to God." So when we speak of God, when we praise Him, when we thank Him out loud or internally, or when we sing of Him, our affections are ascending to God and we're withdrawing from things that are opposed to our Lord. Let's practice the virtue of justice in our lives. Voluntarily, eagerly, and attentively attend Mass, go to confession, pray your prayers.